Hey everyone, welcome to the Book Spider Podcast, a book of the week format program that makes connections between and forms theses about works of literature, also you don't have to. This episode, your three hosts, Hans Berger, Chris Malmberg, and myself, Patrick Barney, are discussing Julia by Sandra Newman. Julia is a retelling of George Orwell's 1984 from the perspective of its main female character, Julia. However, before we discuss this novel that I found fairly frustrating, I have a couple grievances that I need to air. First, I learned of this book through an algorithmic suggestion by some AI, and I was just scanning the interweb or whatever and came up with this suggestion. So I started to read about it. I was pretty skeptical, Orwell and 1984 are pretty dear to my heart. So I didn't see what the benefit of retelling Orwell's novel was. And then I became even more skeptical when I read the review. So the review is by a writer named Daisy Lafarge. Review appeared in New York Times. And basically, Lafarge says that the purpose of the novel Julia by Sandra Newman is to climb into the fictional world of 1984, as well as the misogyny of Orwell's writing, and flesh out a woman's perspective. So Lafarge says that one goal of the novel is to fix Orwell's misogyny. And I think that the way I read her review, she's saying that Sandra Newman's purpose is to fix Orwell's misogyny. And it also seems like Lafarge thinks that Orwell's writing is misogynistic as well. So it's both Lafarge's perspective and Sandra Newman's perspective, or at least that's what Lafarge makes it seem like. So the pieces of evidence that Lafarge offers in support of this claim that Orwell's writing is misogynistic is the protagonist's rape fantasy about Julia towards the beginning of 1984, and the fact that Julia is not a perspective character in 1984, unlike in Sandra Newman's novel, where Julia is the main perspective character. So I definitely think that this criticism of 1984 fails. I don't think 1984 is a misogynistic novel. First, any student of literature should know that the thoughts of a fictional character are not necessarily the thoughts of the author. So when Winston Smith has a rape fantasy, we can't infer that Orwell is a misogynist because one of his characters has a rape fantasy. If we could do that, then, Margaret Atwood would be a misogynist too, since, in the novel Oryx and Crake, I think the main perspective character there has misogynistic thoughts. So we're just not able to make this connection, really. And what's more is that the rape fantasy makes pretty good sense within the universe of the novel. It's super shocking and disturbing, but it makes sense when we think about how the totalitarian state in which Winston lives has outlawed a host of sexual acts as sex crime, including acts of sex for pleasure. So the disturbing nature of this scene emphasizes the oppressive characteristics of the regime's prohibitions. And I think we're meant to understand that, we're not supposed to think that this is good. We're supposed to understand that this is an outgrowth of a system that hates sex positivity, that is sex negative.
If I could actually just kind of add a point there, it really seems to me that if the idea of the novel is to critique a totalitarian system, then if the main character had a healthy, balanced, thoughtful relationship to sex, or had healthy feelings about women that were in line with appropriate values, like, that wouldn't make a very good critique, would it? Like, it
right.
seems kind of absurd
no.
that we would expect. It really actually seems like it would be terribly artistically counterproductive if Winston didn't have
right, absolutely.
If Winston didn't
no,
have
you're
bad
absolutely
fantasies
right.
and terrible, if the suppression of his urges were not twisting his mind in that regard, it would terribly undermine every other thematic idea of the novel.
Right.
Sorry
so,
to interrupt.
Yeah.
It just that seems like
no.
If I mean, it's always possible that, you know, obviously I'm getting the critique secondhand from you, and I'm responding to your presentation
right.
of the critique. But the way that you've presented it, that seems like an absurd criticism.
No, and you know, I actually wrote all this out in detail, but and now when I'm saying it, I'm just kind of using what I wrote as notes. But the word absurd was actually a word that I wrote about this criticism. I think it's absurd. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I appreciate you adding your own viewpoint to further explain why this criticism just doesn't work.
It would be like if you wrote a novel that was set in, you know, the I don't know, like if you wrote a novel that was set in a very a Mormon polygamy cult, right? You write a novel that's set in a Mormon polygamy cult,
right.
And you have a main character who has sexist thoughts. Like, it would be strange if they didn't. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. So the other reason that Lafarge and Newman infer misogyny on Orwell's part is because 1984's female characters are, quote, thin in comparison with Winston's complex interiority. And this seems strange to me because Winston's the only perspective character in the novel. There are no other perspective characters, so it's not like, you know, it's not like Julia is another perspective character who is badly drawn next to Winston Smith, who is really well drawn. You know, he's the only perspective character. And there's a good reason for this, and that's, you know, if we have multiple perspective characters, we actually get a novel much more like Julia, where we lose this sense of paranoia. In 1984, we lose this feeling of deep isolation and trauma. We lose the stultifying atmosphere of mistrust and suspicion. And what replaces that would just be, like, dramatic irony. And that's kind of something that I think is, like, a huge thing in the novel Julia is dramatic irony. Like, you know, the irony of us having read 1984 and seeing everything from Winston's perspective and then rereading it from ostensibly Julia's perspective and seeing how different she sees everything. You know, so that's like the effect is dramatic irony. And I think if we do this in 1984, we lose a lot of punch and weight. And I think that really, if Orwell had decided to do this, had decided to include perspective Julia as a perspective character, then we have one of two effects. One, he creates a perspective that is so similar to Winston's that it's really not necessary to the novel, or he does what Sandra Newman does, which is craft a perspective that I think totally undermines the themes of the of 1984. Like, I don't think that there's any logical, like, the themes of the two novels seem logically contradictory to me, and there's no reason to think that if Orwell had done it that way that would make a better novel. Like, I really think this misogyny criticism is totally wide of the mark.
Just to kind of add a little bit of my own, I basically agree with everything that you're saying here. I just to kind of add a thought, I think that, like, it's totally reasonable to look at the canon, to look at the really established canon of, let's say, dystopian novels and say, oh, I wish there were more female perspectives, or to look right. at the established canon of dystopian novels and say, well, an awful lot of these are just primarily about the thoughts of men, and I wish there were more balanced there, right? Like, I think that's a totally reasonable impulse, and even kind of like approaching the question of what a woman's experience would be like in the particular dystopia of 1984, I think that's an interesting question, right? I think it's unfortunate that for like, it's unfortunate that for purposes of marketing and rhetoric, that has to be presented as a response to a profound flaw in Orwell's novel,
right?
Right, like the idea that you have to like, and I don't know how much of that is like, I don't know how much of that urge is coming from a genuine place, and how much of it is like the kind of conscious awareness that to market a thing, it's better if you behave in a confrontational way, right? But like,
right.
The fact that this has to kind of be framed as a confrontational takedown of a problematic product or problematic work is, it just kind of seems unnecessary to me, right?
And yeah, I think like
and it seems like a certain amount of your subjective response to the book is based around like the kind of needless insult of, you know, like,
right.
I mean, obviously, like, lots of people have sung the praises of 1984, and it's not like it desperately needs one more person out there kind of praising it, but I don't see any reason. I think, like, I don't see any reason to have to break it down or be, you know, unfairly critical of it to create space for more feminine perspectives in the realm of dystopian fiction.
Right. And I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, I think that it's totally valuable to want to have more women's perspectives, more trans perspectives, more black perspectives, you know, a widening of perspectives beyond cishet white men is good, right? It only enriches literature. But that's different from saying that a non-sexist novel is sexist, or a non-misogynistic novel is misogynist. Like, there's no reason to do that. In fact, I just wanted to end by saying that not only do I think 1984 is not misogynistic, I think it's fairly close to being a feminist for its time. You know, it was published in 1949, and I'm not going to say it is feminist. I don't think Orwell ever called himself a feminist, so I don't want to like say that. But you know, the character of Julia, who when I remember first reading the novel, I thought Julia was awesome. Like, I thought she was a really cool, interesting character who had a nice contrast with Winston, who, you know, was dour, however you pronounce it, and pessimistic. And then Julia is this vital, breathing, radical person, which I really liked. So, you know, I just think that the novel is progressive for its time and reflects the first wave of feminist values that would have been recognized in 1949. So I think it's pretty close to feminist for a book that's 75 years old. So that's just what I wanted to say. This isn't to say that Sandra Newman's novel is necessarily bad or anything like that. It's just to say that if it is trying to critique 1984 for being misogynist, I don't think it's starting off in the right place. So those are my thoughts, and now let's get on to my specific questions. And the question I want to start with, it may not be the most important question, but the answer to this question could color our answers to other questions. So let's start with this. Is there any sense in this book, in Sandra Newman's novel, that Julia is an unreliable character?
I don't think that I got the sense that she was unreliable personally. Is this a loaded question because, Patrick, you had a sense of unreliability or
no,
something that you were pointing to?
I don't. No, it actually comes from just a random glance at like a reader review I saw on Amazon where someone asked if Julia is unreliable, and that kind of started my wheels turn. Like if Julia is reliable, then Winston in the original novel is unreliable. And that really, like, changes things, right? Like, if Winston in the original novel is unreliable, then basically it kind of undoes the whole theme, or one of the major themes, which is objectivity of truth, right? And, you know, instead of a book that is about how objective truth is important, it would then become a book making fun of objective truth.
Could you be more specific about what does Julia's perspective as presented by Newman render unreliable from Winston's perspective in 1984? Could you be specific?
Well, just like so Julia from Julia's perspective, She alternately feels affection for and condescension towards Winston Smith, it seems like. And, you know, she seems to think that, like, his interest in truth and his desire for, to dismantle an oppressive system, she's kind of seems to think this is naive. At least this is what I would say. And, you know, so like there she says he's unobservant, he doesn't understand anything, and from her perspective she's constantly manipulating him to do things, but when he does them he thinks it's his idea.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, Winston thinking things that are untrue would make him unreliable. Does that make sense?
But that's I don't know if that makes a narrator, because like a story can be reliable with the narrator still having like it, I think I don't know if I can put this into words, but what you're describing is. I feel like a narrator can be reliable about what they know, and if what they know is because like to some extent Winston's unreliable for a portion of 1984 because O'Brien is playing him, right? So
right.
Like so if like if the two I think. Reliability and unreliability is a kind of a spectrum anyway. And to the extent that like Winston is unaware of his, like what's kind of happening around him in 1984 and Julia's sort of like additional perspective on it from the Newman book, I don't think that necessarily, I'd ask for maybe a stronger or different argument.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I think, and maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, maybe being unaware of like the way in which O'Brien is playing him does make him unreliable to some extent. Go ahead.
I mean, I think that, like, when we think about an unreliable character or an unreliable narrator, what we're thinking about is somebody who, what we're describing with that term is somebody whose perception of the world is distorted in ways that we as a reader recognize, right? There is some,
right.
we are aware as readers that there is a gap between the objective reality of the fictional world, if that's not an oxymoron. A gap between
right.
the objective reality of the fictional world and the subjective understanding and impressions of the character. And
right.
I think that in the universe that's being created in in the universe that Newman is sketching out in Julia, I mean, I think that Winston might in some well, there are things happening that Winston is unaware of because they're deliberately being kept from him, right? Like
right.
the fact that Julia is actually kind of like a honey trap agent for the state.
Right.
I don't think that that would make Winston unreliable, right? Because that is, in fact, it's just knowledge the character is not privileged to have because
right,
of the structure
right, right.
of society. I think there's also, to some extent, like, I think he misunderstands, in the world of Julia, he misunderstands the nature of their relationship or misunderstands the emotional dynamic between them.
Right.
And I don't necessarily even think that that is... I mean, I think that you can admit that objective reality is important and that it's bad for societies to deliberately distort objective reality in the context of politics and geopolitics, and also hold at the same time the awareness that in interpersonal relationships there is always a difference in understanding and perspective between two people, right? Mm-hmm. Every human relationship, particularly if it involves romance or sex, there's always going to be a gap between how the two people experience and understand that. And some people might be able
right.
to come closer than others. But I think that it can be both true that objective reality is important in the world and two people's subjective emotional sense of their connection and their dynamic will always be different. And I don't necessarily I'm on the fence about whether or not I mean, you know, the idea that Winston is misunderstanding some part of how they relate to each other as lovers, you could maybe convince me one way or the other that undermines some of the themes of 1984. I'm not sure about that, but I'm not convinced that it has to necessarily. And, you know, when I was reading those sections, I think, like, I'm not nearly as... I mean, I respect 1984. I like it, but I'm not attached to it the way that you are, so I wasn't...
Sure, sure.
And also, I hadn't read the articles that you had about context, so I don't think that I was instinctively defensive of 1984 the way that you were while I was reading this. I didn't necessarily love this novel, and I do have criticisms of it, but those aren't rooted in offense on behalf of 1984 and Orwell.
Oh, sure, sure,
sure.
Right, right,
but
right.
I mean, I think that as I was reading it, you know, initially she kind of has this idea. There are places where she has this idea of Winston as she has these fairly kind of condescending, negative impressions of him and thinks of him as kind of weak and is unimpressed by his first sexual performance. But then, and I was a little bit put off by those, I think. Because they did kind of seem like almost sort of actively adversarial to the original novel and the character. And
right, right, right.
Necessary.
Yeah, I would.
But then, like,
I definitely agree with that.
But there are also times when her mind would kind of change and she would think, oh, no, actually, like, she would actually really feel like there are other times that she's very impressed by him or pleased by him.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Really starts to have genuine emotion. And I did actually think that there was something psychologically that the way that those impressions kind of interplayed with each other actually felt reasonably psychologically acute and valid to me. And I wasn't so much, I think I was initially bothered by that, but then when I kind of as the relationship develops and as she starts to have a kind of more complicated and richer sense of their experience. Actually, I thought that actually had some texture in a way that felt pretty authentic to what a lot of relationships are really like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
And I didn't necessarily, I mean, again, I could be talked out of this, but like, I didn't get the sense that the greater level of nuance necessarily undermined the subjective sense that Winston had, you know. It just kind of felt like, you know, like I remember 15 years ago, there's somebody that I had a relationship with for about a year, and at the time, I thought she was just madly in love with me, and I kind of had, for years, I carried away from that, just the memory of that as having been, like, somebody who was very, very into me that I kind of spurned, perhaps cruelly. And a few months ago, somebody sent me a photo of us together, and I looked at the way that she was looking at me, and I thought, oh, no. Actually, like, she had mixed feelings, too, and she thought I was, in that moment, she actually probably thought I was kind of a dipshit. And it's, that doesn't, you know, like that, all that that means is just that those things are complicated in ways that are very hard to understand at the time, particularly if you're a naive person who's never had a lot of relationships, you know. So anyway, I actually sure. kind of, I, one of the complexity of how Julia thought about Winston aesthetically was one of the things that I actually found more successful in the novel.
Okay, well, if we think Julie is mostly reliable, and that doesn't necessarily make the original's interest in objective truth trivial or stupid, is there anything else in the novel that does make undermine this idea that objective truth is important? It did seem to me that, like, there was some, like, making fun of the idea of objective truth, or am I just reading into this? Like, is there, like, the novel at least is not ostensibly interested in the subject of truth at all, really, right? Or am I wrong?
I think it's interested in the perception of truth as an attainable goal. And
okay.
my reading on that is sort of, it's based, because I'm probably right in line with Hans. I have criticisms of this novel. I enjoyed as much as you can enjoy something like this. Jesus Christ.
I mean, yeah, it's intense.
It's dark. But the, you know, I didn't regret the time that I spent with it. I'm going to jump right to the end, which is actually one of my big criticisms of the novel.
Okay. Yeah. And I asked a question about that. So let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and we didn't really do a synopsis. So do you just want to make sure that we're giving, if people are listening,
yeah,
and haven't read the book, just like a kind of a sketch, yeah, of what the end actually is.
Do you want me to do that real quick, Patrick? Just,
yeah, go ahead.
So basically, 1984 ends with Winston and Julia having been through interrogation and torture in Love, the department that is sort of like responsible for reprogramming people, for disappearing people, and basically, like, they betray each other, and the end of 1984 is bleak because Winston gives into loving Big Brother. The reprogramming is successful, and he's learned to hate the way that, you know, he's supposed to hate, and he functions in the society, or we leave him functioning as he should in that disgusting society. And Julia goes beyond that to, one, from Julia's perspective, we see Julia not quite being broken in the way that Winston is broken, which is which is interesting. And then also seeing Big Brother overthrown. And Big Brother is overthrown by a revolutionary sort of government society that at first seems to have, you know, with juries and things that, like, make it seem like, oh, this is better. And then there's kind of, and this is how I really think about it, it's like a Twilight Zone-y ending of, like, a kind of gotcha ending of, like, I'm thinking of, like, there's a Twilight Zone episode where aliens come to Earth and they're, like, preaching all of this like we're gonna take you to a better place, and they're like love and peace and the end of the episode is a bunch of humans being herded like dumb cattle onto this ship, and they're obviously going to be like eaten by the aliens. Yeah. You know, it's just sort of like you're led to kind of believe like, oh, this is what this is, and then it's like completely reframed. And we learn pretty like in a kind of quick way that this revolutionary society that's going to take over in place of the outgoing society is just as bad in maybe different ways. And that's where I think like the kind of maybe kind of criticism of truth as an attainable thing, like objectivity of truth, of maybe truth is maybe the wrong way of putting it now that I'm saying it, but morality, and I'd say truth too. I don't know if I could substantiate that, but it feels like the relationship that Julia has to have to the state is a fundamentally untruthful one. And that's like,
oh, that's interesting.
If there's a comment on to the state, to other people around her, like she's potentially like, there's the hint that like Reynolds, who's a, you know, someone in this society has feelings for her. She's pregnant. That's the other really important thing. She's pregnant with Winston's baby.
Well, we don't know if it's Winston's,
but she's pregnant and she's going to be looking, she needs to look after this baby and right. She needs to survive. And that survival is the important thing. And there is, I think, a framing of truth as a little bit Pollyannish within that more gritty sort of conclusion. And I don't mind that as a conclusion. I just don't really like the way that we get there personally.
And in contrast to the original, like, it seems like, so you just said something that I thought was interesting. You said survival is more important than truth, and I think it's the exact opposite in the original.
I would agree with that.
Like, Winston feels like it would be better if he could die than betray the truth or come to believe that 2 + 2 = 5. You know, and that's like, truth is more important than living on. Like, what's living on is actually, you know, perpetuating the truth. Whereas in this novel, what you just said, you know, this idea that like physical, biological survival is the most important thing. I think that's interesting. And maybe that is an area where it undermines the original, or maybe undermine is my word, because I don't want the original to be undermined. Right?
You are very protective. I don't mind that.
I am very protective.
I think that it complicates it. I don't think that it has to undermine it. I think that the, you know, Julia's perspective is not sacrosanct just because, you know, and I don't think that, I think that there is a kind of a fundamental imbalance in that Julia puts on 1984 because Julia's frame is bigger, right? So like, it feels like this is the more mature thing, you know, like in 1984, Big Brother is unassailable. Like, there's like nothing that can topple Big Brother. And in Juliet, Big Brother is a demented old man who's overthrown quite easily. And it feels as though it's fairly cheap. Well, it feels as though it doesn't feel accidental. Like, it's so interesting. Like, the relationship between these two novels, it feels like that couldn't have been that, like it is intended to make Winston's world feel very small, And I will agree with that. I think that I think that from Winston's perspective, Big Brother is, and from Julia's too, but Julia gets to live and survive beyond and see the truth that Big Brother is just like, is just nothing. And like,
well, the truth according to Julia, the novel Julia.
Well, yeah, like, I guess like they kind of you have to. In 1984, you leave that believing that there is nothing that can beat the
right.
state. And in Julia, you come to the end and you realize the state was toothpicks and toothpaste holding
well,
it together. And
right, you.
And I suppose you could actually, if that's true, then you could read that as, in a pragmatic sense, actually a defense of the value of truth, right? The truth of the flimsiness of the state is something that has to be kept away from the characters because it actually falls over with just a light push. And
sure,
none of the characters believe it's possible that the state might be so frail because it perpetuates this image of itself regardless of its actual nature. And so I suppose in some sense there's the in a kind of limited, you know, philosophically uncomplicated way, it does suggest something about the importance of truth, because the lie of invulnerability is what does in fact keep the people of this state under a repressive in a repressive way of being, right?
And I
do think that like I think that your guy's point about 1984 kind of, I think it was very interesting what you said about 1984 kind of coming away with the idea that truth is more important than survival, and Julia coming away with the idea that survival is more important than truth. It also feels kind of accidental and incidental to me, like not really. It doesn't really feel like it's that concerned with a complicated statement about the nature of truth, and to the extent that it takes a different perspective on the value of truth relative to life. I don't know. That seems.
You're saying
like
Julia.
Julia.
You're
yeah,
saying
the novel
Julia.
Julia.
Like
no,
obviously,
1984 certainly is very concerned with it. I think if Julia positions itself differently, I think that that's maybe not. It doesn't feel to me like it's actually that important to the novel to Julia to
right
have that
like
stance. And if we end up in a different place, it's not really. It's just kind of like a byproduct.
Right. I like what Chris said about survival being more important than truth, I thought was extremely interesting, but I also do think you're right, Hans. I like my sense reading this is that it doesn't seem to be that interested in saying something complex about truth. I mean, ultimately, I do think it's mostly just interested in fleshing out the character of Julia. And there are certainly things I dislike about how that characterization was carried out, things that I think are probably against the spirit of how Orwell what Orwell intended, and that's probably the bulk of my irritation with this novel. You know, like ways in which she is fleshed out that really probably are not aligned with the spirit of the original. But I do think that's interesting, like this idea that that survival is more important than truth, but that it's really, that's an incidental idea.
Well, and I wonder if actually maybe it's not so much that survival is more important than truth as that truth is a mechanism towards survival, not an end unto itself. Which would imply that survival is more important than truth, but like maybe the hierarchy is less interesting than the idea of truth as a tool towards survival, right? You know, like there's kind of a, I think it's Vicky says that she's going to leave leave London and go try to find the resistance and fight with the resistance. And Julia says, well, there is no resistance, right? Like there is no meaningful resistance. And that's
right,
that's an absurd idea. And having access to truth about the nature of what's really going on outside the city has some impact on whether that's a decision that leads you somewhere or a decision that kills you, right?
Right.
And so I think that it's less that the novel, I mean, I think 1984 is interested in the idea of truth as something that is to be pursued for its own sake, whereas in the world of Julia, it's really more just kind of an end to maintaining one's life, basically. It's something right. that's valuable in the maintenance of life. And that might actually be something that it, an idea that it might be advancing a little bit more consciously, or if nothing else, maybe more a question of the kind of the perspectives of the different characters, right? Like Winston is someone with kind of a, Winston is someone who temperamentally, intellectually is, privileges truth in this more abstract way. Julia is ultimately a survivor by nature and sees truth in a more instrumental fashion.
Is there a, because we're going kind of bringing back a feminist angle to this. Is there a particular comment on truth as a tool for women or truth? Because like what you mentioned, Vicky, and there's a moment at the very end when Vicky and Julia are brought back together, and pretty explicitly we read that, you know, like they're going to keep like the secrets of kind of what passed between them, of Julia's, you know, relationship with the Thought Police, and a secret, and that there's like some secrets are necessary to survive. And also if Julia allows Reynolds to pursue a relationship with her, there's this idea that there, it seems as though that would be happening in part because of Julia just sort of schooling her attitude toward him, much as she did to Winston, or allowing her attitude to kind of like be flexible, or you know, and there's a, it feels like, is that something that is meant to comment on women surviving, like this kind of using a kind of mixture of truth and secrets and lies to survive, or am I just inventing that?
That's interesting. That, I mean, that's like the stereotype, right? That, and I don't know who's, what demographic is more at fault for the stereotype. Men who say that women are manipulative because, you know, they've had broken hearts in the past, and so all women are trash. Or women who feel that, like, to kind of survive in a world where half the population, not actual half, but, like, the concept is that half the population is physically stronger than they are, so to survive in that world, they have to manipulate, you know, get what they want through, you know, innuendo and whatnot.
Well, I don't think so. I think stereotype, I'd say like trope, but also, I think it's a valid philosophical. It's a valid frame, right? The interiority of women has always been doubted and hated,
right,
and attacked, and that's true. Like that's a real thing. And the
oh yeah, absolutely.
And you're not saying otherwise. I'm just sort of the thing that and it's impossible to say because we're not really in male heads in this novel. But it feels like I'm trying to think of any men that have, I guess it's just really impossible to say.
Right.
But there is a lack of idealism. That Julia doesn't have the privilege that have the privilege of having ideals, I guess, in the way that Winston might have. And that's interesting potentially. And I don't know if that's a comment on women or not.
If it is, it seems a little flimsy to me because everyone in that world is vulnerable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
I can see the idea, like, I can see writing a novel set in, like, the United States in the 60s where, like, I'm just trying to think of a time of great idealism and revolutionary ferment, right? Like, a novel set in the college protest movement in the 60s where maybe you advance the idea that, you know, men have the privilege of having ideals and women don't, and that's because of sexism. And, like, that would be something like that would be interesting. But, like, in the world of 1984, nobody has the privilege of having ideals. And anyone who does and actually expresses them will have them beaten out of them. And that's...
Right.
I mean, I think, I don't know, like, and to some extent, like, any... because everyone in this world is so completely oppressed and beaten down, like the idea of reading a critique of gender power, right, or gendered power differentials or something like that into it seems like a bit of an odd project to me, right? Like it's because it is a fictional society in which pretty much nobody has any power.
Right.
So is this book feminist at all beyond how it's not that it's not, is it explicitly doing anything beyond occupying a female character's perspective in contrast to a famous male character's perspective?
Well, I think it is. There are a couple things that make me think that it. I mean, it, I do think the novel is interested in exploring, a version of Julia. You know, expanding this character, but certainly parts of it are. Could be, I mean, parts of it are feminist. I mean, the description towards the beginning of Julia finding Vicky's miscarriage in the toilet and, like, being required to remove it or no, she doesn't remove it. Somebody
she reports it. Yeah.
She reports it, right. That has literally happened in this city that I live in, where a woman has, this past election, we thankfully, in Ohio, we thankfully said that abortion should be a protection under the Ohio Constitution, but up to that point, we had this 6-week heartbeat bill in effect. And basically that means if a fetus has a heartbeat, you know, you can't get an abortion. So, like, miscarriages, which happen after 6 weeks all the time, you know, could be crimes, basically. You know, it could be a crime, like, that needs to be investigated. And this happened to a woman in my city. She had a miscarriage. She tried to flush it down her toilet. She couldn't. Her toilet got clogged. She called the plumber. The plumber informed on her to the police, and now she faces charges for abortion. And hopefully she's okay because her... You know, she had been going to the doctor, so there's medical records that this was not like an attempted abortion. Like, it was natural miscarriage. So hopefully she's okay, but you know, this description is a very feminist description, I would say, in the sense that, like, women's rights and protections for women's reproductive health are gradually being undermined and eroded, or maybe not even gradually, in both this world in the novel and in our real world, right? Does that make sense? Or not?
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, and I think it kind of, that reading presumes a reader with enough knowledge to make that connection, right?
Well, that's true.
Which, I mean, that's probably a reasonable expectation. I mean, if you think about the actual audience of this novel, probably it overlaps very closely with people who would be familiar with, if not that exact story, like the idea of stories like that, and able
right.
to kind of draw that parallel. It's funny, like one of the first things that, this isn't really feminist at all, actually, as a theme, but like, one of the first images that you see is Julia working on the machines that create fiction, right?
Right.
And the interest there in the specifics of machine-generated fiction felt like a very conscious effort to draw a parallel between that aspect of that world and AI-generated fiction, right? Correct about when this was written,
this would have been written around the time
that everybody was very worried about, you know, I think there was like a, there's even been some discussion on this podcast of things like ChatGPT creating fiction, right? And
right.
so even though I don't necessarily, I'm not, of all the things that worry me about ChatGPT writing fiction, I'm not particularly worried about that being an instrument of totalitarian control. But it did kind of seem like a way of saying, hey, look, eerie parallels between Orwell's world and ours.
Right.
And, you know, right. that which I think leading off with something that creates that connection, you know, disposes the reader to try to look for other parallels. One of which the fetus in the toilet.
Do we feel like there's... like, are there other positives or other critiques of this novel that we haven't talked about? Anything that you guys, like, really wanted to say that you didn't get to say?
I felt like it was pretty good on atmosphere in the first half. It was pretty good on kind of creating the... and granted, I mean, it had a lot of... you know, a pretty rich original to draw on, right? I mean, like it's easier, I'm sure, to kind of create a fictional universe when you're starting with when somebody else has already done a lot of the work and you're filigreeing, right? And I don't mean that to be dismissive of the craft of what's done here, it is
filigree is actually an extremely hard skill, right? Like filigreeing,
sure, absolutely, it's a difficult thing to do, yeah. But I mean, yeah, the sense of the psychological and personal and interpersonal dynamics of living in this world and kind of the texture of it, I thought were very well drawn and persuasive. And for the first maybe 2/3 of the novel, I did feel very kind of swept up in it. I think that I would give it that compliment, right?
Right.
I was just very, the way that it handled plot in the last third, there were certain things that just, certain key things that just really annoyed me, honestly. Like the,
sure.
There's a, one of the key, so there's a reenactment of the climactic scene of being in room 101 she gets the rat face cage that Winston gets at the end of 1984, and there's this kind of setup payoff thing where a little bit earlier in the novel somebody tells her, oh well, everybody's scared of room 101, but actually it's only allotted for strict 15-minute increments. So if you can just last 15 minutes, then they'll say, oh, shucks, sorry, somebody else's turn, right? And in fact, like, she, through a little bit of quick thinking, manages to, you know, put the rats off for long enough that the clock runs out and they go, nope, sorry, your 15 minutes use of this room is up. And O'Brien kind of goes, oh, darn it.
Yeah.
And they pretty much let her go at that point, right?
I definitely, I definitely thought that was garbage.
That really just felt, it felt very, very, very much like the reality of the world was being manipulated to fit the needs of the dramatic arc of the novel.
Right, exactly.
In ways that felt quite cheap.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a relatively small thing, but it's a thing that, like, sits at such a... It's a small thing, but it's a thing that sits really at a point of dramatic and plot fulcrum where it has huge impact in everything that happens after
right.
that. And so
100% agree.
And there's a little detail there where O'Brien has the kind of famous line about O'Brien has the famous line in 1984 about imagine a boot smashing a human face forever. That's the future. And there's a scene where Julia meets a woman who works with O'Brien, and she says, "Oh, I'll bet he's going to give you that boot on the human face line. I came up with that, and he stole it." And something about that really kind of felt like just kind of picking on Orwell in 1984 in this
kind of cheap way that didn't
seem like it served any purpose other than to just kind of be irreverent for the sake of it.
Yeah, I really disliked that part as well.
It felt irreverent in a metatextual way that just completely broke the kind of the fictional dream, you know?
I had a slightly different take on like, I agree that it's like fourth wall breaking in a way that doesn't make sense for this world. But also I reading it from this position of having read that New York Times review, like, we got to fix the misogyny, I was like, is this really where you want to be? Like, you know, a woman, it's more important for a woman to take credit for heinous torture than than to decry the heinous torture. You know, I don't necessarily know that that's the way it's intended. It's just that having come to it from that position, I was like, what are we doing here exactly? Why are we trying to do this? Like, why does she have to take credit? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It felt like it privileged. It felt like it was so concerned with the kind of gender critique of 1984, or with the kind of narrowly defined feminist perspective, that it kind of lost sight of the bigger intersection of themes and ideas.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, that was just an annoyance. And I think also, you know, Chris, you called out the kind of Twilight Zone-esque ending, right? Where, to kind of give the full context for that, there's about halfway through, there's a scene where Julia is talking to O'Brien when O'Brien is recruiting her. And he says something about, or maybe it's O'Brien talking to Winston, I can't remember. But O'Brien tells one or both of them that, you know, I think it's just O'Brien talking to Julia. And he says that, you know, the radicals will... the radicals will ask you to say that you'll throw acid in the face of a child if it serves the cause. And there's this whole sequence of questions that he says will build up to that. And then at the very end, when she's kind of being processed into the new society that's overthrown Big Brother, she basically just gets handed a form that says, like, will you throw acid in the face of a child? Check yes or no.
And it's will you kill hundreds of innocent people? Will you like, be willing to kill hundreds of innocent people?
Right.
Check yes or no. And it's, I mean, it's so, I think what stands out about it is the precision with which the form exactly recreates O'Brien's little speech, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the... I think it's meant to be striking in the similarity of it, but the fact that the form is just word for word, verbatim, exactly repeating the same questions with the same arc, the same buildup, just feels, it has this paradoxical effect where it's so incredibly tidy that it becomes difficult to tell what point it's trying to make, right? It's like normally when things are that tidy, it's hard to tell what they're trying to say, and instead it has this effect where the tidiness is so confusing that it's hard to tell what it's trying to achieve.
Right. I remember coming to that end part and like feeling this weird sense of surreality, like, is this like, is she going to say this was a dream, like this overthrow? Like, how else would this like exact sequence of words come up again unless like you're living in a hallucination or something like that, you know? So it definitely had this really weird feeling for me.
And I guess normally, I don't know, like I'm normally the kind of person who would be positively disposed toward ending a novel on an ambiguous, surreal note, but because there's just like no ambiguity or surrealism really anywhere else.
Right.
It just ended up feeling, it was weird. It felt like a giant flashing arrow pointing at nothing in a way.
Right.
Yeah. I'd say there was no, I'd say what's ambiguous, if what's ambiguous is actually kind of sloppiness in my opinion. Like I don't feel like the ending is ambiguous at all. Like
really, it's not like, supposed to be ambiguous,
just,
but
it's not supposed to be. Yeah. It's, you know, like it's so, I mean, I, you know, maybe you could argue that like, there is something strange about like the question repeating itself, but I think it's just meant to kind of indicate that like there's no like hope outside of Big Brother. There's just other Big Brothers kind of. And I'll jump in and say I think the great albatross on this novel, or one of them, is just the fact that it's trying to be about Julia. You know, like if this were even kind of just set in Oceania and was about, you know, if it was about the overthrowing of Big Brother, you know, that would be, and it didn't really kind of try to kind of cleave to the existing storyline and then wrestle with the plot point of the rats and, you know, try to kind of tell the same story over again. If it was more free to do its own thing, I think a lot of the atmosphere, Hans, that you complimented, it's very grotesque at points in a very effective way that I liked. I liked the idea. I do like the idea of basically this, not just Oceania, but like the broader, the more fundamental human impulse to control people with through very gross to control people in for states to control people in ways that are that have those people do terrible things to each other. I think that I like that. Like I wish that the novel did different things to get there and to explore those themes.
Interesting.
But I thought it was effective. If it was just Julia and there were no 1984, I would have liked this novel just fine, and I liked it just slightly less than just fine. I just sort of enjoyed my time with it.
I definitely liked parts of it, like thought parts of it were really effective, and then really disliked other parts. I was on, you know, had more of an extreme reaction. Like parts I thought were really cool, parts I thought just sucked and really irritated me, but you know, I mean, I didn't really expect anything else when I read this. Like, I think maybe in the first third of the novel where it stuck, like it didn't, all the retconning in the first part of the novel, the first third of the novel was like soft retconning. Like, you know, Julia did this or that, which Orwell didn't really plan for or intend, but it didn't do anything to like make you totally reevaluate the way the relationship is presented in the first novel or in 1984. But then when it got into harder retconning, I became pretty distant from it. So I don't know. It's what I expected, but it for a second I hoped it wasn't gonna do that, but then it did. So whatever. I guess, you know, I don't know. It's a lame way to conclude, but I guess those are my feelings. Sucky and okay at the same time.
That's generally how feelings go.
Yeah. What'd you say, Hans?
I said, just like life.
Yeah, exactly. Just sucky and okay at the same time. Exactly. All right, Chris, your pick is next. What do you want to do?
I want to do Pale Fire, Nabokov.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, listeners, you've been hearing our discussion of Julia by Sandra Newman in comparison with the original 1984 by George Orwell. I hope you have enjoyed hearing this discussion. And next time, we are going to do Nabokov's Pale Fire. Peace out until next time.